You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
LeBron, you are the most interesting man in the history of sports, and you are still the ninth best player in my all-time top 10.
I'm relentless. Can you feel this? I'm going all in. It's time to cash in. One moment in time. Let's get at this. Be tremendous. Relentless. I'm relentless.
Here we go. This is the Skip Bayless Show, episode 103. This, as always, is the undisputed everything I cannot share with you during the debate show that is undisputed. Today, I will dive deep on LeBron James. And today, I will dive just as deep on what happened to my brother, Lil Wayne, the other night at the Laker game. And I will dive even deeper into why he was once banned as a season ticket holder from Heat games in Miami. Today, I will defend my high school idol, Pistol Pete Maravich, as his college career compares with Ponytail Pete's, as in Caitlin Clark's. And today I will close with a flurry of your probing and deeply moving questions. But first up, as always, it is not to be skipped. I'll start with one of your questions. This is Dominique from New York, New York. After the King hit 40,000 points, does he move up on your all-time list? Dominique, I will get to that in just a moment. But up front, off the jump, I will say to all you billions of blind witnesses out there, you billions of LeBron lovers and defenders and apologists, you should buckle up for what's about to come. Because I'm about to unleash the top to bottom truth about LeBron James' career. And I'm about to dare you to tell me I'm wrong. I dare you to tell me I'm wrong about all of what I'm about to say. So before I do get to 40,000 points, and my all-time top 10, allow me to address an issue that keeps popping up on Undisputed. My man Keyshawn Johnson continues to say to me, I'm obsessed with talking about LeBron James. Even last week, he said as we were going to break, you know, I think you go to sleep thinking about LeBron James. Wrong, wrong, laughably wrong. I talk about LeBron James on Undisputed and on this show because everybody's talking about LeBron bleeping James. He is still clearly, obviously, the face of the NBA, even as we speak, at age 39 in year 21. He is now the leading scorer of all times. So yeah, I think I'm going to talk about the leading scorer. And at age 39 in year 21, he's playing at a level I could never have imagined. Nobody could have ever imagined at this stage and age. And he ain't finished. He's 39 going on 29 with, I don't know, 3-4 good years left. I don't know, 5 good years left, 6-7 good years left. I don't know. I see no end in sight. And I'm going to stop talking about LeBron James. I'm going to gear down on LeBron James. I'm going to avoid talking. No. This man, furthermore, and most important, is the most interesting man in all of sports, not just in basketball and football and baseball and hockey and name it. The most interesting man in all of sports, and I'll go you one more, in the history of sports. I've been doing this a long time. I have never encountered a superstar athlete remotely as interesting on a daily, nightly basis as LeBron bleeping James. Never, ever. And I'm going to stop talking about him. I talk too much about him. Do you understand the force field around this man? In a great way. It's great for our business. It's great for our water cooler discussions. Every time he steps on the basketball court, something happens above and beyond the normal or predictable. Every single night. Trust me on this. I never miss a LeBron James game. Listen, I've watched every LeBron game since he entered the league. You can ask my wife, Ernestine, who's my longtime girlfriend, Ernestine, dating to 2005 in New York City. I know in the time she's been with me, never, ever have I missed a LeBron game. You can ask her. I just don't. No matter what, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, I'm watching LeBron's game. Damn the Torpedoes. Nothing will preempt a LeBron game because something's going to happen on or off the court, before, during, or after the game. There's going to be a subplot. There's going to be a backstory. There's going to be an issue of some sort. And I'm not saying that LeBron premeditates. It's just who he is. It's the force field he was born into. Things happen. Great things, good things, bad things, crazy things, debatable things, all of them debatable things. Yeah, I love to talk about LeBron because everybody loves to listen about LeBron. Everybody else loves to talk about LeBron at least as much as I do. But yes, I have for years been condemned as LeBron's number one critic. I guess as his lone wolf critic. I don't know. I don't follow other people. I don't know what they're saying. But I believe I've been condemned because I'm one. I don't know, maybe the only one who tells the truth about LeBron James. I'm talking about the great truth and the not so great truth. No, he's not Michael Jordan because he's not even close. I mean, for me, it's laughably offensive for Keyshawn Johnson or my former partner, Shannon Sharp, to even suggest that LeBron is better than Jordan. To even put LeBron in the same sentence with Jordan is offensive to me. Because it's just so wrong. just me, me thinks. Keyshawn gets tired of me talking about LeBron because he gets wary of trying to defend LeBron against the truth that I speak about him. As Keyshawn readily admits on the air, he's friends with LeBron. He's had dinner with LeBron. I'm sure he hopes to have dinner with him again. All that is great by me. But I'm not friends with LeBron. I like him from a distance, but I don't want to get close to him because I want to remain fiercely objective. I want to remain courageously objective, independently objective. And I will not stop talking about or telling the truth about LeBron, great and not so great. I don't know how many hundreds of times, thousands of times I've said on air, on Undisputed, or for that matter, back to my days on First Take, greatest driver of the basketball ever. That's not even close. Still is to this day the best driver of the basketball in the NBA today. 6'9", 2, whatever he is, 50 or 60. Ambidextrous, born left-handed, plays both ways, both hands. Broke the 40,000 mark with a left-handed driving layup because he's left-handed. It's a sight to watch him drive the basketball, freight train the basketball. Never been anything like it before. And as I often say on Undisputed, he is still, to this day, the best passer in basketball. On a nightly basis, I sit back and think to myself, man, that was a pass. You can't teach it. You can't coach it. Born with it. Beautiful at it. Some of his long feed bounce passes on semi-breaks, they're just so beautiful to watch. It's an art form. And he's still doing it at the very highest level. And finally, on the great side, I got to tell you, the more I think about it, the more in awe I get of 40,000. This is the ultimate longevity record in the history of sports to me. LeBron James has already played 15,000 more minutes than Michael Jordan played. 15,000 more and counting. 39 going on 29 as we speak. He doesn't play finesse basketball. He doesn't protect himself floating out on the perimeter, as you well know. Greatest driver of the basketball ever. Freight training. Often playing football basketball, which inflicts upon his body extreme basketball contact. Extreme basketball contact. He takes shots and he goes down hard. Already 15,000 more minutes than Jordan played and counting. I hesitate to even talk about this because I don't want to jinx it. Let me try to knock on some kind of wood here somewhere. I got it somewhere. But I have to say this. This is 21 years of career without a single surgery for LeBron James. 21 years and counting without a single career-threatening injury. That's not human. Remember Kobe, the bitter end? His body just betrayed him, just broke down on him. It was a knee, it was an Achilles, it was a shoulder, it was this and that and this and that. LeBron's had his soft tissue issues. He's pulled hamstring occasionally, he's pulled groin occasionally. He's had the ankle turns. By the way, speaking of the ankle turns, talked to an orthopedic surgeon, this is a year or so ago, who had looked at the MRIs of both of LeBron's ankles, both of them freshly taken about a year ago. He said, they're a mess. He said he's turned them so many times, both of them, that both have become what the surgeon would call arthritic. Doesn't mean he's 80 years old. It just means they're arthritic ankles because they've taken so much wear and tear. The surgeon, who's one of the top, said he's going to need some cleanup surgeries on those ankles. Nothing major, just some cleanup surgeries. And I'm thinking, I couldn't tell. I watch him night after night. He has his ankle issues still. But he looks 39 going on 29. I don't see the ankles, arthritic as they are, affect him at all in his running, his cutting, his jumping, his exploding. It's just not human. I saw Victor Conti of Balco fame or infamy the other day on with Jason Whitlock. They were kicking around the idea that so many people have talked about. Has LeBron ever used anything PED-wise to keep him going this late in his career? Victor Conti said something about, well, sure, you have to think that he has. But again, Victor Conti was quick to say, I certainly don't have any proof. We've all heard and read all those stories about biogenesis, the connections to LeBron through Rich Paul and his wife, Savannah. A lot of reporting there about PEDs, but nothing connected directly to LeBron. I'm a fitness nut. I know a lot about it. I know nutrition. I know fitness. I know a lot about PEDs. I don't use PEDs. And sometimes I wonder, has LeBron used some HGH, human growth hormone, just to keep him going? Has he taken some extra testosterone just to keep him going? My guess would be yes, but I have absolutely no proof. I insinuate nothing. It's just modern medicine. And it's not human what he's doing. But here's the point about all of the above. No PED will prevent a knee injury or an Achilles tear. No, it just won't. That's what's so amazing about LeBron's career is that through stretching, strengthening the right way, through blessing, just being blessed, he has managed to avoid, just to keep his joints all sound, the knees, the shoulders, not the Achilles, it's not a joint, but knees and shoulders for sure, ankles, joints. I mean, with such high contact, you've had no knee issues whatsoever. I mean, some of that is just blessing. I don't know. How do you want to define it? Luck? Fate? LeBron never talks about religion, so I don't know what his religion is. Not sure what he believes about higher power. No idea. But whatever that is, he's got it going. Never seen anything like it before. Because in the end, a lot of it is just luck. Now for the other two reasons I'm so in awe of 40,000 points. So astonished by 40,000 points. I'm just telling you the truth. LeBron James is a below average, I'm being nice about that, three-point shooter. LeBron James is a lousy free throw shooter by superstar standard, heck, by anybody's standards. He's just a lousy free throw shooter. Do you realize how that heightens the degree of difficulty for him? It's been so much harder because he's not a great shooter. So think about this. Career from three, LeBron is 34.7%. Of the current active players in the league, that ranks 118th career-wise, 118th. That means 117 other players who haven't played as long as LeBron, but however long they've played, their career better from three than LeBron. He's 118th. Now let's go to free throw shooting. LeBron career is 73.5 of all current active players. That ranks 183rd. That means 182 current active players for their careers, not as long as LeBron's, but for their careers have shot better from the free throw line than the all-time leading NBA scorer. Think about that. Think about how many hundreds and hundreds of points he left on the table because he was a below average three-point shooter and a lousy free throw shooter. Think about it. Think about how many times he's gone to the free throw line and missed at 73.5%. Just for the record, what if he'd shot 10 percentage points higher at the free throw line the way Jordan and Kobe did? They were both 84% career from the free throw line. Magic was 85%. Larry Bird was 89%. What if LeBron James had been Larry Bird from the free throw line, vaulting from 73.5 all the way up to 89% for his career? Do you realize how much faster he would have gotten to 40,000 points? Way faster. It's always perplexed me, mystified me, how a LeBron James, who always posts and gloats so much about he's in the lab, never got in the free throw lab. I don't know why. Maybe he did. Maybe it just didn't work. Maybe that's just one gift he was not blessed with. It just seems like with a shot doctor coach, with a real shooting coach, that you could have improved up to 80-ish percent because you're LeBron bleepin' James. I mean, they're called free throws for a reason, because they are free points. So many missed free throws, so many missed opportunities. So back, Dominique, to my top 10 that you asked about. Here's my answer. Before 40,000 points, I had LeBron ninth on my all-time list. After 40,000 points, I still have LeBron ninth on my all-time list, because playing longer does not make you better or more valuable. I'm sorry. LeBron James is not better than Larry Bird, who I have at eight, one notch ahead of him. LeBron James is not better than Kobe Bryant, who I have at seven, two notches above LeBron. Both Bird and Kobe were much better shooters and much, much better clutch closers than LeBron has been, lo, these many 21 years. LeBron James is not more valuable than the big men I have in my next four positions on my top 10 list. Six is Mr. Russell, as in Bill Russell. Five is Tim Duncan of my San Antonio Spurs. Four is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, whose all-time points record, of course, LeBron broke. And three is Shaquille O'Neal, who was simply the most dominating force for about 3 years on a basketball court I ever saw, both on offense and defense. LeBron has never been the leader or the winner that Magic Johnson was from day one, dating back to the NCAA Finals I covered in Salt Lake City in 1979, Magic versus Bird in the finals. No, LeBron has never been Magic. Magic is at number two on my list. And I'm so sorry, blind witnesses, but LeBron has never been Jordan. I have Jordan at one, where he obviously belongs. Michael Jordan won 10 scoring titles to LeBron's one. Michael Jordan won a Defensive Player of the Year award, and as good as LeBron used to be on defense and can be when he picks his spots from night to night, he was never a Defensive Player of the Year. As I'm sure you know, blind witnesses, Michael Jordan was 6-0 in NBA Finals with six MVPs. While LeBron has as many finals losses, six, as Michael had victories, six. And please don't give me quality of competition, because all those years through the Eastern Conference, LeBron had a cakewalk to those finals, a cakewalk through the East that he owned. And don't get me started on LeBron's last quote-unquote championship won in that bubble where so many teams just wanted to go home, stuck in that bubble. It was a bubblicious championship that deserves an asterisk, so don't get me started on that. You blind witnesses sweep under your little magic carpets all those epic fails LeBron suffered, all those classic flameouts in that Boston series, the last series he played, the first go-round in Cleveland in 2010. His owner, Dan Gilbert, accused him of quitting because he was so bad in games 4, 5, and 6, three losses to the Boston Celtics. Lord help LeBron for his 2011 first finals with the Heatles, as they called the Miami Heat, against the Dallas Mavericks, when the chosen one became the frozen one in games 4, 5, and 6. An epic flameout. Against my Spurs, 2014 finals, LeBron James and company got swept by a record finals margin. Nothing like that ever happened to Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I could go on and on, this flame out, that failure, but I won't. That's enough. MJ had none of the above. None of the above. I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell the truth once more about this. LeBron has always had trouble closing basketball games. Still to this day, nothing but trouble closing basketball games. I've often wondered, was he not born with the clutch gene? But I can go broader. He definitely was not born with the closer gene. Last season, you heard me say on Undisputed, I would detail them, painful detail for you blind witnesses, day after day. There's another one and another one. I had 12 games in which the Lakers last season were right there in the fourth quarter. 12 games. I could go back now, but I won't waste your time or take your time. Right there in the fourth quarter, right there fairly late in the game, and LeBron disappeared. LeBron came up empty. It's not all his fault, but you'd think he still would be the closer for a team featuring an Anthony Davis who, when he's right, he's a top five player. But not so much the guy you want with the basketball in his hands late in games. That's LeBron, still the best passer in basketball, the all-time leading scorer. Take us home, James. No, he loses his way. And he loses his way again. And again, it happens consistently and repeatedly. And I'm not going to stop telling the truth about that. Let's just look at what happened lately against the Denver Nuggets, obviously now the defending champions. LeBron's Lakers have now lost 8 straight games to the Denver Nuggets. In 6 of the last 7 of those games, including 2 this year and 4 last year in the Western Conference Finals, 6 of the last 7 games, LeBron's Lakers were right there with the Denver Nuggets in the fourth quarter. You can't tell me that the Denver Nuggets are better than the Los Angeles Lakers. Overall better, step back better. They're not. But somehow, Jamal and Joker close when LeBron can't, or LeBron and AD can't, or LeBron and Austin Reeves can't, or LeBron can't. It's happened again and again and again. Those 4 games last year, conference finals, do you remember what happened? You saw it, you watched it, and you tried to expunge it from your memory, blind witnesses, but it happened. LeBron in those 4 combined fourth quarters, this is the Western Conference Finals. Do you have a chance to get there? You could play the Miami Heat. You could beat them again like you did in the bubble. 5th championship, right there on a silver platter. All 4 times, you're right there in the fourth quarter, and LeBron bleeping James goes a combined 7 of 23 from the floor in those 4 fourth quarters. He goes a combined 1 of 10 from 3 in those 4 fourth quarters. And you remember the closeout game here in L.A.? You remember what happened down the stretch last few seconds. Last 2 shots are taken by LeBron James to tie. Neither find the rim. Takes a shot at the shot clock. It's heavily contested. It hits the side of the backboard. Tries to drive the ball on Aaron Gordon. Jamal cuts him off at the pass. Gets a hand on the basketball, and both he and Aaron Gordon block the shot before it remotely gets close to the rim. That's how the Western Conference Finals ended, in a sweep for the eventual champion Denver Nuggets, who are not that much better, if any better, than the Los Angeles Lakers. Right there in all 4 fourth quarters. Now I've seen 2 games this year. I'm sorry, the opener this year was at Denver. It was a wipeout. It was a championship parade for the Nuggets. But 2 games here in L.A. this year, both times, right there in the fourth quarter, no LeBron down the stretch. Right there. The other night, Saturday night, national TV game, I had added it up. If you count the 4 conference championship games last year and the 1 home game this year going into that game Saturday night, LeBron then was a combined 9 of 31 from the floor in the fourth quarters and 1 of 11 from 3. I'm calling him out about it. Maybe he heard, maybe he didn't, but he did respond, because in the fourth quarter last Saturday night, national TV ABC game, big game, LeBron bangs out 11 quick points. Bam, 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 bam. Way to go, LeBron. I'm like, here we go. That's what I want to see. Still got a long ways to go. So we get down to the 7:47 mark of the fourth quarter. LeBron drives the basketball, greatest driver of the basketball ever. He muscles his way home for an and one. The free throw would have tied it. But LeBron has to strut it and flex it and shoulder shrug it, show the crowd, they can't stop me. And I'm saying, LeBron, not these guys. Don't do this to them. Don't try to show them up. Don't try to prematurely celebrate against these guys. These are the defending champs. These guys are coached by the guy who at their parade last year in Denver said, "We are the Lakers' daddy." And they are. Late in games, daddy. Come to Papa LeBron. But he's celebrating, and I'm saying, no, I'm tweeting. You could just read my timeline. No, not yet. Save it for the end. Close it, then celebrate. LeBron goes to the free throw line and almost airballs the free throw. Barely ticked the front of the rim. That was to tie with 7:47 left. But he redeems. Here he comes. He is the king. 7:34 left, just a few seconds later after a Denver miss. LeBron pulls up almost from the logo and bombs a three. And he goes into a celebration, the likes of which you rarely see, especially with 7 minutes and 34 seconds left in a basketball game. He's shaking his head. No, not in my house. I got this. I got you. I'm your daddy tonight. I'm tweeting, no, LeBron. No. Not yet. Not against these guys. Defending champs. Too much late game character. Too much Jamal. Too much Joker. Not yet. He's celebrating, shaking his head. No. They can't contain me. I'm the king. No, LeBron. Game teeters along to the 3:22 mark. LeBron doesn't score. They're down one, are the Lakers at this point. And here comes LeBron dribbling the ball up the floor. And they pick for him at the top of the circle. And he's got a little lane. And he goes left, naturally left-handed. I don't know what happened. He just lost the handle. It happens. He is human. As he went up to shoot, he just lost the handle. Ball squirts out of his hands, out of bounds. He acts like, oh, they touched. No, they didn't touch it. He just lost it, ref, buying none of it. Denver's ball. That was the end of the Lakers that night, as I knew and tried to love them. By the way, I picked them before the year to win it all. I did, because I think this is a loaded basketball team. If they can get Jared Vanderbilt back, their best defender, and I think they will by the playoffs, if they can ever get that little shooter, Gabe Vincent from Miami, clutch, guts, takes and makes big shots in big games, if they could ever get him in the rotation, he'd be a great fit for LeBron. He is not afraid, Gabe Vincent, as you saw again and again with the Heat. They don't have those two right now. But again, it's a really good basketball team. And yet, down the stretch of that game, from that LeBron turnover at 3:22 on, the Los Angeles Lakers here in L.A. at home at what I call the Crypt got outscored 13-4 by Daddy. 13-4 Denver. They lost by 10 at home. You believe in that? By 10 at home with LeBron bleeping James running the show. Closing it down, opening the door for the Denver Nuggets to run through. Never seen anything like that. It happened again. That's six times out of the last seven losses right there, and nobody could close. And you want me to elevate LeBron in my all-time top 10 above Larry Bird, one of the great closers in the history of basketball, and Kobe Bryant? Don't mess with him late in games. Mamba? Seriously? No, I'm not going to do it. Magic? Jordan? No, I'm sorry. 40,000 is 40,000. All-time longevity achievement. But just playing longer doesn't make you more valuable. No, sorry. Tell me I'm wrong about anything I just said. So, the other night after he did pass 40,000, most interesting man in the history of sports, sat there in front of his locker, created a new narrative. I was dumbfounded by it. Never heard this before from him. Sounded good, played great for the blind witnesses. All of a sudden, LeBron James says after the game that when he came out of high school, out of Akron into the NBA, everybody wanted to see me fail. He then amended it to, well, everybody outside my family, my teammates, my hometown, my home area wanted to see me fail. No, LeBron, they did not. That's not true. Everybody didn't want to see you fail outside of the Cleveland area. I didn't want to see him fail. I was mesmerized. I got to see him maybe twice on TV, St. Vincent, St. Mary. I'm on the edge of my seat. He goes to Sacramento, age 18, first NBA game, hangs 25 on the Kings. I thought, that is spectacular. This is going to be something to see for a long, long time. Some people a little resentful at the way he handled himself coming out of St. Vincent, St. Mary's. Did some resent the fact? Were some a little skeptical about the fact that he already had tattooed across his back, Chosen One? That became the Sports Illustrated cover headline, Chosen One. Well, we didn't call it. He called himself that. He proclaimed himself Chosen One. He chose, coming out of high school, to wear 23, which had been immortalized by that guy up in Chicago, that guy Jordan. LeBron James, at age 18, chose to continue the powder toss, pregame powder toss, that was part of Michael Jordan's pregame repertoire. He chose to continue that. He told the world, coming out of Akron, Ohio, I got next. I'm him. That's what LeBron said to the world. Some resent that. I don't know. I didn't, because I thought, well, maybe he can back it up. But it was a mouthful, because you don't want to dare that guy, that ghost up in Chicago. But now we've seen year after year that no, LeBron, you're not him. You have shattered every longevity record. You have had an all-time top 10 career, obviously. You have wildly entertained us with your personality and your creativity, social media impact Jordan never would have dreamed about sharing with us. Jordan was unto himself. He was godlike. I got to know him in Chicago. I was there. I covered his Last Dance season, the Bulls, 1998. He was distant. He was aloof. He gave us the basketball, but he didn't give us much more. LeBron gives us his everything, and it is wildly entertaining. LeBron, you are the most interesting man in the history of sports, and you are still the ninth best player in my all-time top 10. This is Mario from Boca Raton, Florida. I used to live in Boca Raton out of college at Vanderbilt. I just got married. My wife was teaching in Lake Worth, Florida. It's my first wife, not Ernestine, obviously. And I was working downtown in Miami, Florida at the Herald. Love Boca Raton. We kind of split the difference. We both drove 45 minutes north and 45 minutes south. So Mario from Boca says, he didn't ask, he just said, you should go to a Laker game with Lil Wayne after what happened. Maybe so, Mario. Just to bodyguard, my brother Lil Wayne, just to run interference for my man Lil Wayne, just to set the courtside attendance straight when they treat Lil Wayne like just another rich Bruce Wayne trying to get to his courtside seats. So here's the backstory. At All-Star Weekend, the commissioner of this league, Adam Silver, approached Lil Wayne, and he thanked him, shook his hand and thanked him for all he gives to the NBA. He's done so many free appearances, he's done so much to help promote, popularize the NBA because Lil Wayne loves it and lives it. So much free gratis from Lil Wayne. And the commissioner thanked him profusely, according to Wayne, and I believe him, for all he has done. So going back a week ago, the NBA approached Lil Wayne and asked him to participate in an Adidas promotion in which he would be decked out in Adidas apparel while sitting courtside at a Lakers home game in seats provided by the league, through the Lakers, by the league. So Wayne texted me while he was on his way. This was a week ago, Thursday night. And I said I was surprised that he was going to watch the Wizards play because that wouldn't be the kind of marquee game that Wayne would want to see and be seen at. But I didn't know about the promotion. So I asked, is your son with you? Because often he takes Cam with him to these games because Cam loves basketball, even at least as much as his father does. Wayne texted back, no, just the bros tonight. Just the guys he hangs with. And of course, Wayne arrived fashionably late. I mean, it was just the Wizards, and LA traffic at that hour is horrendous. Wayne takes one of those sprinters. I think it's a Mercedes Sprinter that a lot of the NBA players use. Take him and his crew all the way from out in the valley where he lives downtown. It's a long drive. It's a tough one at that hour. Sort of the remnants, the backside of rush hour. So Wayne and his bros walk up to where they usually enter to go to the courtside seats. And the attendant at that point says, no, no, you can't go this way. You've got to go the back way. And Wayne, who's obviously a courtside veteran at Laker games, said, well, no, it's difficult to go that way because the seats are actually hooked together on the front row and you have to climb over the seats if you go the back way in. So you can't separate, that people can't move the seat sideways so you can step between them to get to the court side. You have to climb over the seats. And he said it gets a little awkward for everybody, us and the people already in the seats. But this attendant said, no, no, you can't go in. You got to go to this other back entrance. So there they go. As they start to enter that way, there's another one of these ushers, not that usher, but just one of these ushers. He says, no, you got to wait till the ball's not in play. Wayne's like, well, you know, he's thinking to himself, I'm supposed to be doing this promotion. We need to get out there. So they go back and forth. And then Wayne says, it's really going to be okay. We do this a lot. And as they start to walk, they take one step. As Wayne said on Undisputed the next day, from that usher, he got an Wayne doesn't do He just doesn't do it. No, and I don't blame him. He won't roll with your I asked Wayne later, did he know who you were? Oh, he knew who I was. No. So at that point, Wayne told me very politely, he said, thank you very much, sir. And he turned his crew around and they walked out of the arena and back to the Sprinter and back onto the superhighways they went back toward the valley. Wayne said he barely got into the Sprinter when a text popped up from his manager, Fabian, who had just heard from someone in the league office who was already apologizing for what had happened. Wayne was fuming. He was hot. He tweeted about it, maybe saw the tweet. It was scathing, as it appropriately should have been. And he was just flat furious the way he had been treated. And so he tweeted, maybe this had something to do with his stance on Anthony Davis, because he said early this basketball season on Undisputed, he's on every Friday, 11:30 Eastern, if you haven't noticed. He said, it's time to trade AD. He had seen enough. I've seen enough of Dak Prescott, but he had seen enough of AD. Trade him. Ever since then, AD has played like his pants are on fire, like Wayne lit the fire underneath him. If the Lakers do go places in the playoffs, maybe Wayne deserves a game ball. I don't know. I thought that was strategically placed at that point to relight the fire of a potential top five player who often needs his fire lit. But Wayne theorized in the tweet, the scathing tweet, maybe it's about AD, maybe it's about somebody else, maybe it's something else. I theorized, well, maybe it's LeBron, because he clearly doesn't care for me and my critiques. My very honest critiques, maybe he's holding that against Wayne. I have no idea. Wayne said, no, I don't think that's it. So Wayne and I then went back and forth the day after about what had happened way back when Miami with the Heatles featuring LeBron and Dwayne Wade. Wayne had courtside season tickets because he was living in Miami. This is 2011. And he loved him some NBA, but he's a diehard, natural born, lifelong Laker fan. So one night when the Lakers came to Miami, Wayne could not contain himself. He was openly cheering for Kobe, of course. I think some of the Heatles didn't like it, starting with Dwayne Wade. And at one point, Wayne told me that he was being hassled by security to the point that during a timeout, as Wayne looked up, there was Dwayne Wade, hands on knees, panting, sweating. And Wayne said something to him. I think the quote was, I'll paraphrase it a bit, but I'm going to use the real live language, if you will. Forgive me. But Wayne said something like, you don't fuck with me, meaning you don't like me. You guys don't care for me. And he said, Dwayne looked him right in the eye, sweat dripping from his chin, and said, no, we don't. I think it was then about the Lakers. One thing led to another, and Wayne got ejected to the point that he got banned from going to Heat games, even though he was a season ticket holder. the happy ending to that story is, some years passed. Wayne said he was performing somewhere he couldn't remember. Dwayne Wade came to him backstage after the concert, walked straight up to him, looked him right in the eye, extended his hand, and shook Wayne's. Wayne said he didn't have to say a word. Wayne knew that D. Wade does fuck with him now, if you will. That Dwayne does respect him. That Dwayne does love him. And Dwayne does appreciate all that he does for a league in which Dwayne is now an owner. I'm pretty sure what happened to Wayne a week ago at the Laker game will never, ever happen again. So last Sunday, as you surely know, Caitlin Clark passed Pete Maravich's career record for scoring in all of college basketball. I need you to understand up front, I sincerely love watching Caitlin Clark. I was watching Sunday, as were millions and millions of other people, because it was a record-smashing rating on my network, Fox. Caitlin Clark is simply the greatest long-distance shooter in the history of women's college basketball. Never seen anything like her. And she isn't just a feet-on-the-floor set shooter like Magic was or Manu was or like Tyrese Halliburton is. No. Caitlin jumps and shoots. She is a bona fide jump shooter who can make them from the logo like they're free throws. She's an all-time great shooter, jump shooter, who's also an all-time great passer. What a combination. I mean, if only LeBron had been able to shoot like Caitlin can, Lord have mercy. 50,000, 60,000. But please, for a moment, suffer me this. Allow me to defend a man I actually got to see play live. Allow me to defend a high school favorite of mine because he shattered every mold with his long hair, shoulder length hair, in his long floppy socks that fell down into his shoes, a coach's son at LSU, who bombed three-point shots before there was even a three-point shooting line. Who threw behind the back, between the legs, never before seen passes that were so clever and so creative and so revolutionary for the time that they often hit his teammates flat in the face. Pistol Pete Maravich, a 6'5" two guard, averaged 44.2 points a game through his college career. I'm going to say that again. He averaged 44.2 points a game through his college career. He wasn't 7 feet tall. He was 6'5", a jump shooter, a very good passer, and an ultimate scorer of the basketball in any way, shape, form you could imagine. a 6'5" white guy who could sky, who could contort, who could create in midair with Picasso genius. Never seen anything like that. Please, if you haven't before, behold a few Pistol Pete highlights on YouTube if you can find them. Just experience a little bit of Pete, especially in college. Pros, he was sensational, but he was a wreck. He had huge alcohol issues. He was on really bad teams. Still put up a lot of points and did a lot of things that left a lot of people's mouths open, but nothing like he did at LSU. I got to see him at what was called the All-College Tournament in my hometown of Oklahoma City. This was 1969 edition. Remember, it snowed, ice stormed. My friend Bruce Scott and I drove. We slid all the way down May Avenue, all the way to the State Fair Arena to watch Pistol Pete and his LSU. Got there just as they were about to toss up the jump ball. The tip went backward to Pete, who, trust me on this, God is my witness, in one motion, he caught the tip back to him and whipped it behind his back three quarters court on the money to a teammate, breaking free for a layup, opening tip, three quarters court pass behind the back on the button for a layup. If I'm lying, I'm dying. I saw it, and I still can't believe what I saw. But here are the points. In those days, freshmen could not play varsity basketball. So Pete was able to play only 3 years at LSU, sophomore, junior, senior. Nobody went early to pro basketball in those days. As a freshman, Caitlin Clark was able to average 26.6 points a game. For her career, she's averaged 28.3 points per game for her 4 years and counting. Still not finished with her senior year, of course. Pete, again, averaged for 3 years at LSU 44.2 points per game. In Pete's day, there was no shot clock to keep teams from stalling and playing keep away from Pistol Pete. And as I mentioned before, no three-point line. So extremely conservatively, I'm going to say a fourth of Pete's buckets in college were from three-point range. They counted for only 2 points. So I'm going to say extremely conservatively, that's another 350 points Pete would have had with a three-point line. So obviously, nothing against Caitlin, but this was not a fair competition, not a level playing field. I mean, Caitlin did break Pete's record, which, trust me, that was not easy in and of itself. I stand in awe of that. But for me, unofficially, that record will always be held by that skinny kid from LSU with the hippie hair, the droopy socks. Who took me somewhere over the rainbow. Next question is from Carlos from Washington, who asks, any interest in seeing Dune 2? I'm sorry, Carlos. None. I'm just not a sci-fi guy. Give me real life Give me real world, past or present. Just keep it real. And you got me. But I did not read the Dune novel when it came out in 1965, though I read about it. It was a bestseller. I did not see Dune when the great David Lynch did it in movie form in, what was it, 1984. Thought about it, didn't. It was a big deal then. Didn't go. I did not see the Dune remake, what was it, 3 years ago? And I will not see Dune 2. Unless maybe, Carlos, you have piqued my interest enough to watch some of it, as my wife Ernestine says, as a treadmill movie. Often on a Saturday or a Sunday, I'm on my treadmill at home. And if I'm not watching sports, I'm watching a movie that Ernestine will not watch. Maybe I'll check out Dune 2 just out of curiosity on the treadmill. But the only sci-fi franchise I partook of was Star Wars, just because Star Wars, in my time, back in, what was it, 1977, it was just such a mega event. I couldn't help going. To me, it's the biggest movie event I've experienced in my lifetime. So I did 77, and I did, what was it, 1980, Empire Strikes Back. I did 83, Return of the Jedi. I did those three. Then after that, hit and missed. It got blurry with all the spinoffs and prequels and sequels and prequels and sequels, and I can't keep up, and I've lost interest to date. But I did all three of those, and I enjoyed them immensely because the story is still captivating to me. It was epic movie making. But understand, I've never watched a single episode of Star Trek, so I wasn't a Trekkie because I wasn't a sci-fi guy. I will tell you, Predator is up there among my all-time favorites, but that's present day on Earth in the jungle with Arnold versus a sci-fi monster, right? At least we're here now. I can relate to the circumstance in which Arnold found himself against what appeared to be an invincible sci-fi monster who was mysteriously trapped on Earth. I still have no idea. Who had nuclear capability, as we saw in the end. But in the end, I ate a lot of Lorna Dunes when I was growing up, but never have done any movie dunes. Probably won't. That's it for episode 103. I want to thank you for listening and or watching. I want to thank Jonathan Berger and his All-Pro team for making this show go. Thanks to Tyler Korn for producing. As always, please remember Undisputed every weekday, 9:30 to noon Eastern, the Skip Bayless Show, every week.